today is Bridget Krumhout. Bridget, am I saying your name correctly?
Absolutely, David. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
Thanks for coming here. Tell me, what do you do?
So I work as a technical advocate for Pivotal Cloud Foundry and for the software company Pivotal. And what that is a platform as a service, open source software, actually. Cloud Foundry is open source. Mm-hmm. It's a project that came out of VMware, where Pivotal spun out from. Mm-hmm. And Pivotal still contributes about 65% of the commits to the open source project. And we also have our own supported commercial. We also have our own supported commercial distribution.
Cloud Foundry. So what problem does Cloud Foundry solve?
Absolutely. So, you know, the dream of build, ship, run that everyone gets excited about. And there's definitely
that dream last night.
Right? There's adorable whales. And then you wake up and you realize that you actually need to write an awful lot of glue to get that working. Uh-huh. And all of the stuff that seems like a great idea is very, very beta. Mm-hmm. And you realize that, especially if you're a large enterprise, you probably don't want absolutely everyone building and shipping and running everything. So then how do you build in a little bit of perhaps role-based access control?
Okay.
Basically, once you start building out your container management and orchestration platform, it starts to look suspiciously like a PaaS, like a platform as a service.
Okay.
So,
and this is what Cloud Foundry helps with, is with that deployment automation?
Absolutely. So Cloud Foundry, because it's a platform as a service, handles the all of the components like deploying more infrastructure, scaling the infrastructure, controlling your centralized logging, making it easier to, say, tie the authentication into your, say, Active Directory or whatever it is that you want to tie the authentication into, as well as acting as a platform layer on top of any infrastructure that is API addressable that somebody writes a cloud provider interface for. So that's where we got into conversation that was sort of interesting.
Yeah, so everything you said up to this point, it sounds a lot like Chef or Puppet or one of these infrastructure tools. But you're a little bit different from that, though.
It's a little bit different than just straight up infrastructure automation, because instead of focusing on the servers, Cloud Foundry focuses on the application layer.
Okay.
So you don't have to spend time artisanally handcrafting VMs and giving them to people, because nobody needs a VM. What they need is an environment that is hopefully very close to production in terms of its capabilities and constraints, so that they can test their software and make sure it works. And then they would like reproducible production environments that it can be elastically scaled. Like, those are the things people want. People don't actually want a server or a VM. They want those capabilities.
Correct. Yes, a VM might be the way of giving them those capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, that is a way to deliver those capabilities.
So are you saying you're turning IaaS into PaaS? Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm saying that it's an IaaS agnostic PaaS. So that's the interesting part is a lot of people use Cloud Foundry on top of something like vSphere or OpenStack, because it does work on top of those, because they are API addressable infrastructure. Hmm. However, Cloud Foundry also works on top of AWS, GCP, or Azure. Microsoft actually wrote the CPI, the Cloud Provider Interface, for Azure, because it's pretty important, I would imagine, to anyone in the position of running a cloud platform to make it as easy as possible for people to move their workloads there.
Oh, so let me rephrase that, is that Cloud Foundry offers an abstraction layer away from the deployment, whether that's AWS or Azure or whatever the hardware is, whatever the vendor is, whatever even the underlying web server is, for example.
Yeah,
so they're going to focus not on the IaaS piece of it. They'll just focus on their application.
Absolutely. Okay. So whatever IaaS choices you want to make, you don't want to build out all of your deployment infrastructure using, like, let's just pick on AWS for a minute because I've used it a lot.
Okay.
If you build everything using AWS's auto-scaling groups, it'll work just fine for auto-scaling, and it's not portable to other infrastructures.
Right, because the commands to
the commands are not the same.
Azure are not the same as commands to AutoScale, Amazon or Hadoop or whatever.
So you want it to be an abstraction layer on top of your infrastructure of choice, so that anything that you're doing with your application, you can do it on any infrastructure that makes sense for your budget, for your business needs. There are, for example, plenty of retailers who are very happy to use Azure because they would really prefer not to use Amazon for their retail needs.
Because they're a competitor.
Exactly.
Okay.
So like for people's business needs, it sometimes makes a lot of sense to pick one cloud provider over another.
Sure.
But if somebody has already sunk a lot of time into building a very cloud provider specific deployment pipeline and infrastructure, mm-hmm. it's much harder to change. Whereas
sure.
a lot of people are in the position where they might have a long lease on a data center right now, they might have hardware that they're still amortizing, but they might be trying to make decisions about when we are no longer using, OpenStack in our data center, we know we want to move to the cloud,
right.
This exciting amorphous cloud.
But I like the way you say that.
how do we get from here to there? And we don't want to have wasted all the time we spent in our data center. We still want to be on that trajectory that gets us to where we want to be.
Okay.
And so the people who are using Cloud Foundry in their data centers can move workloads to Azure without changing anything in their developers' lives.
I see. So
they literally change.
They could be on-premises building things for themselves and defer that cloud decision till later.
They can move to Azure without having anyone have to change anything.
Okay.
They literally
they
change
from one provider to another.
They change a configuration file and then repush.
Okay. And there are organizations also, some organizations will actually deploy some to Azure, mm-hmm. some to AWS, some on-premises.
Absolutely.
And this allows them to do that without lots of different deployment scripts.
Right, absolutely. So it's basically, we want enterprises to be able to focus on put their innovation tokens where they're going to get the most business value from them.
Okay.
And developing a deployment pipeline and a scaling infrastructure for your applications, delivery is not what most people sell, and it's not what most people are going to differentiate themselves on between themselves and their competitor.
Plumbing.
It is. And I got to say, I've spent my entire career caring a lot about systems, infrastructure, and operations. So I would never say that ops is unimportant. I would say it's essential. People who say no ops are confused because someone is ops.
Right.
They just might not work at your company, which is fine. Just like serverless, there are still servers. You just can't SSH
it's somebody
into them.
Else's server.
it's someone else's server as a service.
Somewhere. Right.
That stuff is super essential.
Yeah.
And a lot of organizations maybe don't need to generate all their own electricity. And they maybe don't need to roll their own Linux distro. And they maybe don't need to build their own cloud or their own cloud platform.
I would suggest that is very true.
Right?
There are other people that can do that a lot better than they can. That's not their core business. Even maintaining those servers is probably not their core business.
And even if they could do, and they possibly many of them could do, a fantastic job, they then would be spending time on something that is not creating a differentiating business value for them.
Which is their core business.
And so James Waters at Pivotal, one of our SVPs at Pivotal, likes to talk about the value line, which is to
SVP
say,
is what?
Like senior vice president or whatever, acronyms, who knows. He likes to talk about this value line, which is to say you need your infrastructure and you need your VMs and you need your containers and your container orchestration and your deployment pipeline and your, source control and your, entire delivery system. You need all of that stuff, but it's not a differentiating business value versus your applications.
Okay.
Like your applications that make you more, useful or productive or a better experience for your customers, for your end users than your competitor. That's the stuff that makes you different. Your apps, your site, everything that, is it performative? Is it fast? Can you ship features quickly?
Right. That's the important things to your core business.
Yeah, those are the things that your users are going to experience, the entire user experience, that will inform their decision as to whether or not they want to consume your services, invest in your products. And so, we try at Pivotal, we try to help people build software better. And with Cloud Foundry specifically, we try to make it really easy and portable for them to make whatever infrastructure choices are right for their business while not having to redevelop all that plumbing, as you put it.
Yeah.
Because we would prefer to have them spend their expensive and valuable developer hours on making applications that will bring real value into the business.
I like that. Now, you said that Cloud Foundry is an open source project. Mm-hmm. Is it managed by Pivotal? Are you guys
kind
of the owners of that?
So Pivotal actually has the Cloud Foundry Foundation. Okay. Is not controlled by Pivotal. It's an independent software foundation.
Okay.
That Pivotal helped establish. And okay. One of the reasons for that, that a lot of people who work in the open source space find a foundation is really useful to have, is that everyone worries about lock-in. They worry about cloud lock-in. They worry about vendor lock-in. And because Pivotal does not control open source Cloud Foundry, the foundation does, then anyone who chooses to use open source Cloud Foundry on their own or chooses to work with a vendor, and I believe at this point I'm contractually obligated to tell you if you're going to pay someone money, it should be Pivotal. But if you're going to work with one of the many vendors, and Pivotal's not the only one, I mean, you know, IBM, HP, Swisscom, like a whole bunch of large organizations have their own Cloud Foundry distributions.
Oh, okay.
I mean, IBM Bluemix is actually Cloud Foundry.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
So
now is this then, this is your revenue model then? You have the Pivotal has established a foundation to help support this open source project, which is free to use and free to contribute to.
Yeah.
But then now you as a company are supporting it through consulting? Is that the idea?
Yeah, so, well, we have a commercial distribution that people can pay for the, you know, supported by Pivotal to whatever degree of support that you want to work with us on.
At the binary level from the open source one?
It is open source Cloud Foundry plus more.
Plus more, okay.
So, for example, the commercial version of Cloud Foundry has integrations for people who would prefer not to hand roll all of their own everything. They can get things from a vendor with the click of a tile and have a supported, you know, completely end-to-end. This has all been tested. It works together. Supported.
What are some of those items?
For example, if people would like MongoDB or the ELK stack or... if they would like to, using the service broker model, if they would like to consume Azure or Amazon services, a lot of times people would like to do something inside the platform because at that point they can use the role-based access controls, which exist in the open source, but there's a GUI for management that is available in the Pivotal version.
I see.
There's stuff like the auto-scaling, so it's possible to auto-scale the platform either manually or in open source, you can write your own glue to autoscale it with whatever triggers you want. Hmm. Or the commercial version of Cloud Foundry from Pivotal comes with autoscaling just completely baked into it, so it'll be responsive to whatever you need to set.
So once a server gets too overtaxed, then just add another one automatically.
Right,
like slows down a little bit, remove one.
A lot of people they're thinking about their consumption. Mm-hmm. They look, and I think that's one of the reasons they like Azure, is they look at the per minute pricing as opposed to the per hour, and they say, well, that's nice.
It is nice, yeah.
So people are interested in making sure that they're getting good value for the money that they're spending on their infrastructure or their infrastructure as a service. And so having the ability to respond to whatever spikes might occur, again, without having to spend a lot of infrastructure heavy lifting, developing that capability themselves, which of course, these are all smart people. They could do that. A lot of us could do absolutely anything given unlimited time and money and people, but we have to decide where the right place as an organization to spend our effort is.
Right.
And because this is a well-supported open source project that has good commercial distros with good commercial support, it's a nice place for people who are in that sweet spot of they have scaling problems. They don't need to write their own databases from scratch because they can use things that actually exist in the world, the commercial off-the-shelf solutions, as it were. But they would like things to be a little bit more customized, more customizable. And then, of course, you can't talk about infrastructure these days without talking about containers. Mm-hmm. And Cloud Foundry has been using containers since 2011. Docker came on the scene in 2013, and when they open-sourced RunC and the Open Container Initiative started in 2015, at that point, the Docker image format became the standard, industry-wide. Yeah, so now Docker images run natively on Cloud Foundry. Like, it's supported. It's generally available. It's GA on Cloud Foundry now. So it's kind of nice for people who... especially inside the organization, they might have people who say, we would like Docker. And they say, okay, that's super. And it's great you're using it in development. How do we get that to production?
Sure.
There's a lot of good projects out there, not just Cloud Foundry. There's a lot of good projects out there that make that possible, including stuff from Docker Inc. themselves. And all of them have their own strengths and weaknesses. And the strengths of Cloud Foundry are basically that for large enterprises, because Cloud Foundry in general and Pivotal specifically works with a lot of our large enterprises, we understand that things like role-based access control are very important. Mm-hmm. Things like chargebacks are important. Mm-hmm. You know, things like people being able to be multi-cloud are important for many people's needs.
Sure.
And so, like, building something that's infrastructure agnostic, and again, free and open source, but then has a lot of, you know, commercially appealing add-ons for people who need that sort of thing, including, like, so Pivotal runs, and I suppose if people want to try it, they can go to run.pivotal.io, and there's a 60-day no credit card free trial.
I was going to ask you, where should they go next?
Absolutely, like they can do the free trial there. Uh-huh.
That's a free trial of the commercial version.
Of the commercial version, mm-hmm. Yes. They can go to cloudfoundry.org if they want to, you know, be directed to the correct GitHub repos to download and try the open source version. Mm-hmm. I actually did a tutorial at OSCON, the O'Reilly Open Source Conference, mm-hmm. About Bosch, the infrastructure automation tool. Mm-hmm. And so there's, if they look on my GitHub, they can...
Where's your GitHub?
GitHub.com/Bridget Crumhout.
We'll put a link to that.
Everything is Bridget Crumhout. you know, Bridget Crumhout at Twitter, BridgetCrumhout.com. It's 15 characters at Twitter. Don't judge me. I made my Twitter account in like 2013. So what are you going to do?
It only leaves this many left for
I know, right?
The message itself.
but yeah, so there's a lot of like DIY things you can try if you want to try standing up the infrastructure automation yourself, pointing at Azure or whatever. Full disclosure, the demos that I did at OSCON, I did use AWS, but we'll have to try Azure
That's
for next
fair.
Time.
So theoretically, it should work on Azure as well.
Oh, no, it does actually work on Azure. So what I was going to say
That'd
is...
be an exercise for the viewer.
There
try.
We go. so run.pivotal.io is running on AWS. Pivotal has Pivotal Web Services runs on AWS, but we had customers demanding Azure, and so we now also have... hosted stuff for customers, like, up and running, and it all runs perfectly fine on Azure as well. So, as I mentioned, Microsoft wrote the cloud provider interface for a bunch of it. So anything, because it can do things like attach storage, spin up new VMs, wire up networking, you know, all of the things.
Okay.
So, yeah.
We've talked about a lot of things here. Is there anything we haven't covered that... you want to make sure people know before they head out into those links and start trying?
Well, I mean, depending on when this is going to go live.
Go live next month or so.
Well, if it's before the end of July and we're not sold out yet, which very well might happen, Pivotal has a conference in Vegas the first week of August.
Excellent.
So,
who wouldn't want to go to the desert in August?
Well, it's who wouldn't want to go to Vegas from August 1st through 4th and hang out with a lot of interesting people from the industry? And stay in the air conditioning, hiding from the rays of the sun.
We're
haven't gone outside much. but yeah, they could check out springoneplatform.io.
Okay.
We can put links in the show notes, right?
Absolutely.
And they can find me on the Twitters, on the internet in general.
I'm going to do that today.
I do have the benefit of having a Google unique name, so.
So do I.
Nice. And it's something else that... another thing I'm pretty involved with that people could check out is devopsdays.org.
Okay.
They can
those are all
look
over,
for
right?
They're everywhere. There's like 30 of them in mm-hmm. different cities around the world.
There's
this year.
One in Chicago.
There is, in fact, one in Chicago coming up later in August, I believe. It's
is
the end
open?
Of August. And there's...
You'll be speaking there?
That one, I am going to actually be on a canoe trip in the Boundary Waters Wilderness Preserve between Minnesota and Canada without a cell phone during that one.
You're making the right choice.
I spoke at it in 2014. It's very good. And actually, the DevOps Days in Chicago is organized by my podcast co-host from the podcast that I co-host.
Oh, what is that podcast?
It is Arrested DevOps,
okay.
Found at ArrestedDevOps.com. And
okay.
Matt Stratton from Chef and I and Trevor Hess from 10th Magnitude.
Well. Yeah, he's been on my show.
Fantastic. They co-host
Rainbow
that with
DevOps.
Me.
Rainbow DevOps.
That's right. Rainbow Dash Ops or
Dash
whatever
ops.
It is.
I said it wrong. I'm sorry. Sorry, Matt.
But it's at Matt Stratton on Twitter. I mean, at least he doesn't change his Twitter handle of that, right? That'd be impossible to memorize.
Bridget, thank you so much.
Thank you, David. The friends that I've made in this technology sphere are delightful, truly fantastic. And I think that going to industry events, going to conferences, and getting a chance to interact with your local community at meetups or anywhere else is the way to do that. So when you're listening to this and thinking, I'm a consumer of this, you don't have to be. You could actually be a producer. I mean, come on David's podcast, or go talk to the people who run your local DevOps meetup, your local cloud meetup. They almost certainly need more people to speak at the meetup, maybe some lightning talks. This is speaking to you as somebody who runs meetups, runs conferences. We're always looking for your ideas. So that's what I'd suggest.